Throughout the ages, people have wondered about the basic nature of humankind. Are we inherently good or evil? Is it more natural for us to be kind and cooperative, or are we more naturally selfish and competitive? So there are a lot of different ideas about this. If we go back to the late 1700s, philosopher and economist Adam Smith said that humans by nature are empathetic, that we are wired to share in the pain and the joy of others. Around that same time, the philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau said that humans are born good and that we are instinctively concerned about the welfare of others. Well, of course, there's another set of views on the other side of this, one in particular you may be very well familiar with. It sprung from Augustine of Hippo back in the 5th century, and he proclaimed the doctrine of original sin. And he said that all people are born broken and selfish, and that they can only be saved through divine intervention. And his beliefs actually shaped early Christianity such that I'm sure many of you have heard this doctrine before. It often gets translated as humankind fell away from God, fell away from grace through Adam and Eve rebelling in the Garden of Eden. And that we need a savior to bridge our separation with God. Well, in Unity, we don't teach the doctrine of original sin. We lean more in the direction of original blessing. We teach that all people are born good, that indeed our inherent nature is good. And evil and the appearance of evil result from poor choices based on error thinking. And the most common erroneous thought that spurs this kind of aberration is the belief that we're separate from God and we're separate from one another. And so in order to return to that natural state and place of goodness, our good human nature, we need to overcome that kind of thinking. We need to overcome that misperception. It really means that we come back to oneness. Well, each of us gets to decide whether we believe that human nature is good or bad. But what do you think Jesus thought? What do you think he thought about the inherent nature of human beings? I just have to believe that he thought human beings were inherently good. Because so much of at least what I know about Jesus and what I follow in his teachings is that he saw and appreciated and even brought out the good in people. And a lot of his ministry was about helping others see the good in them. He was always pointing to the light in people. You know, it's just hard for me to imagine Jesus like just berating somebody or telling them how worthless they were. You know, something like that. I can't even fathom that. You know, he was raising us, wanted to lift us in consciousness, but he knew that what we were born with and born as was good. And so he pointed people to their innate power and potential to tap into their higher self, and in so doing to change their lives, change their thinking, change their health, completely transform their view and their situation. You know, Jesus didn't tell us to fix ourselves. He told us to love ourselves. He told us to love one another. And I believe that Jesus saw that light of goodness in all people, and that he simply believed sometimes they needed a little help uncovering it. And so we see as he was working with his disciples and teaching them about nonviolence, that there must have been a belief underlying that humans are good, because otherwise nonviolence would not work. I mean, consider the fact when someone responds in a peaceful way or takes a stand, that it wouldn't create a response, it wouldn't be effective if the other person didn't have some sense of conscience, if they didn't in their own heart of hearts know the difference between what is right and what is not right. And so when Jesus was teaching his disciples to turn the other cheek, to walk the second mile, if the Romans ask for your shirt, give them your coat also. So he was teaching them these things. He was teaching them the art of nonviolent resistance. And that is simply taking an exaggerated or an unexpected action that disarms the oppressor. Okay, so you're surprising them, essentially. You're not responding the way they thought you were going to respond. And so it throws them off. And Jesus knew that when we respond in a surprising way and we're coming from a place of love and integrity rather than fear and retaliation, that in that moment, when the oppressor is thrown off balance, there is that opening for the light to come in. There is that opportunity for them to choose according to their higher self rather than their ego. There's opportunity for them to really listen to their own heart. And so we see that by creating this little bit of open space, it can trigger a complete turnabout in others. And so let's figure how this worked, okay? Let's just take an example. Suppose somebody came up and smacked you on the cheek. I know it's not a pleasant thing, but suppose somebody did that. And rather than hitting them back or running away, you stood there and you took it. But you stood strong and perhaps even offered the other cheek for them to strike you on that cheek as well. Well, the person who struck you, that they weren't expecting that, right? So they're really thrown for a loop. It's like, wait a minute, we were playing out this whole scene about, you know, I'm the oppressor and I'm doing this to you and you're supposed to have a certain reaction, but that didn't happen. As a consequence, they are now thrown into a dramatic moment of truth. And the question is whether they're going to shift in their response. But because you have responded in a way that was strong, but not returning, retaliating in kind, it's opened up a chance for them to come back to a higher truth. So I think about remember back in 1989, the young man, the Chinese man that was standing in front of the tanks in the Tiananmen Square. That's one of the most iconic photographs in history, one of the most inspiring photographs ever. So it was the day after the Chinese military had come and suppressed and, you know, really tromped on all of these pro-democracy demonstrators. And this man was walking along, and he just walked right in front of one of the tanks that was pulling into the square. And in fact, I believe there were a row of tanks behind that one. And if you remember, the tank started to try to go around him, and the guy moved over and blocked him there, remember? And then the tank went this way, and he stood over, and he just stood in front of it. Now, what do you think it was like for the driver of that tank? You see, all of a sudden, this wasn't just a military exercise. This wasn't something he could fulfill in automatic pilot. Now I'm supposed to do this. All of a sudden, now this is a person-to-person interaction. This is a human being in front of him. Undoubtedly, he could see. And he's faced with that choice of whether to potentially take a human life. And he stopped. I'm not saying everybody would stop. I do believe there are individuals who are probably damaged enough that they might have kept going. They might well have run that student over. But what we know is that by and large, the human tendency, our natural instinct, is to respond in compassion, to be kind, to help. And even science has shown this. So there's a great series of studies done in 2012. It's reported in Scientific American. And so they had this rather prestigious, diverse group of researchers from Yale and Harvard. And they got together to look at the two steps of decision making. So this model says there are two steps. The first is when you're making a decision. Your first is your intuition. And your intuition is just what you automatically think of doing. It just comes effortlessly. And the second step in making a decision is reflection. And that's when you have conscious thought, when you start rationalizing. Well, if I do this, that'll happen. If I do that, this will happen. And what these researchers wanted to know is when we're responding in that first instance of intuition, is it our intuitive instinct to respond in cooperation or in selfishness? So that in all these studies, all these different experiments involved more than 2,000 people, and the results were striking and conclusive. In every single case, the quicker intuitive response was always cooperation. It was always kindness and compassion. And the slower, more reflective response veered more in the direction of selfishness or self-interest. So, well, we can see how this would happen, right? Because if you take some time in there, that's when your mind starts getting busy and you start making up stories about your own self-interest and other people and what this is really all about. But when you're just coming from your own human instinct, you tend to come from a place of love. And that is what is the immediate in-the-moment response. And so the revolutionary power of nonviolence, I just think this is so brilliant because it creates that in-the-moment instance that demands a response. You know, the turning the other cheek, the man standing in front of the tank. It's like right here, right now, what is your immediate response? You see, it's revolutionary because it calls people into their highest self. It's an invitation to come back into God. Right then, come back into your humanity, your highest humanity. So Jesus knew this, and Gandhi knew this, and Martin Luther King Jr. knew this. They knew that truly the way to combat and overcome systemic injustice was through higher consciousness, and the way to reach that higher consciousness was to tap into the innate goodness in humankind. And what that meant was in every case to face hate with love. To not only, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, to not only refuse to hurt, but refuse to hate. To really do our own spiritual work to come up higher. It was so amazing. He said, we rise to the position, our goal is to rise to the position of loving the person who does the evil deed, while hating the deed he does. He said we must look for the good in our enemy and remember, within the best of us, there is some evil, and within the worst of us, there is some good. So our goal is to defeat the systemic injustice, not necessarily to quash people. You see, all of these guys were skilled at fighting injustice without physically fighting human beings. And the courage that took is really almost unfathomable. When you consider that Martin Luther King was jailed 29 times, that he was beaten, that his home was bombed, that he even the night before his assassination pretty much knew he was going to be killed, and still he is continuing to preach love. And he said, when you come to the point that you look in the face of every man and see deep down within him what religion calls the image of God, you begin to love him in spite of his actions. No matter what he does, you see God's image there. This is a very high spiritual work. This is really calling forth the Christ in us. And I bring it up today not only because this is the weekend that we celebrate Martin Luther King's legacy, but because we need to remember it now more than ever. You see, when tempers flare and insults are flying and people are hurting and the division is so deep, it can be extremely tempting to jump into the fray, to figure out whose side we're on and come out swinging. But Jesus and Gandhi and King all said, no, no, make a different choice. Take a higher road. Let God be God in you. And Martin Luther King expressed this in such a powerful way, a way that we can all relate to in our own lives. Gosh, I just get amazing strength and integrity. He said, when the opportunity presents itself for you to defeat your enemy, that is the time which you must not do it. There will come a time when the person who hates you most, the person who has misused you most, the person who has gossiped about you, the person who has spread false rumors about you most, there will come a time when you will have an opportunity to defeat that person. It might be in terms of a recommendation for a job. It might be in terms of helping that person make some move in life. That's the time you must help them. That is the meaning of love. And that is how our lives are transformed, and that is how our world is transformed. Always seeing the image of God in one another and choosing love. You know, last Thursday night, we had the most fantastic Freedom Sing-Along here. I have to say, I wish you'd all been here. It was so heart-filling. We showed clips of Martin Luther King Jr., and we sang songs of unity and love and peace. It was absolutely beautiful. And in working on this talk today, I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, in a way, how easy for me, as a white, middle-class woman, to talk about things like standing up in the face of injustice. You know, taking the moral stand, nonviolent resistance. I've never put my life on the line for anything. I've never been beaten. I've never taken a physical risk. I've never been hit with a racial slur. I've never had my heritage maligned. I've never been refused a job because of my race or ethnicity. Who am I to talk about this? But what I realized is that if any of us is being hurt, we are all being hurt. And that each of us, including me, is being called to courageous action in whatever way that manifests in our particular life. And so perhaps for me, it's simply speaking my truth to you and looking for ways to be of support. And most of all, to build this, as is happening, as has always been the case, as a diverse, inclusive, accepting community, because if it can happen here, it can happen in the world. And so much light shines in here, and there is so much goodness and so much hope. This is living into our true nature. And what I know is that that's the direction we're headed. That even in these difficult times, this is our moving through the mud so that we rise as the lotus. This is the training ground for our breakthrough. I have no doubt that we will emerge from this time stronger, more united, more aware, higher in consciousness than we have ever been before. And I know this because I know we are inherently good. I know it is the way of the heart, and our hearts are calling us, and God is calling us. We just need to listen. Anytime you might be getting discouraged about humanity, remember that there is far more good happening out there than bad. We just tend to hear more about the bad. But there are random acts of kindness and goodness and brotherhood and rescue and heroism every single day. And for me, I always take heart and inspiration from remembering the inspiring words of 13-year-old Anne Frank, hiding from the Nazis in an attic in Amsterdam. And she said, I keep my ideals because in spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart. Let's turn now to our meditation. Thank you. I invite you to get comfortable in your seat and take a deep breath in. Close your eyes. Breathe out. Breathe out into this glorious space of oneness and the truth of our shared being. Release any concerns or worries, anything at all, and just turn your attention to God within. I invite you to imagine breathing in and out through your heart, and as you do, connecting with the infinite mind of God. The oneness of all life connects us one to another. Feel the way in which your heart responds as you imagine kindness that has been extended to you and kindness that you've extended to others. Appreciate ways in which you have seen beyond outer differences and beheld the divine in another. I invite you to breathe into the beautiful natural goodness that is within you and open your heart to guidance as to what is for you to do, to love at a higher level, to resist the temptation to draw boundaries, to demonize others. What is tugging at your heart? What understanding that will help you see the presence of God in all people? Open your heart and mind and listen in the silence. We give thanks for the knowing that the dream of freedom, equality, and justice shared by Martin Luther King is still alive in our hearts. We give thanks for the progress that has been made and the knowing that there is that we will come even farther, that we are destined for oneness and enlightenment here on this planet Earth, and we are ready to do our parts. And we remember these words as well from Anne Frank, who said, "How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. Let us each do our part. Thank you, God, and so it is. Amen."